Good morning. You're watching The Program with Ted Rall and Jamal Thomas. It's Tuesday, June 23rd, 2026. Thank you so much for joining us. Please like, follow, and share the show. We're here at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Time every Monday through Friday. And that means today is one of those days. Today is Tuesday. It's primary day in New York and a bunch of other states around the country. And we will be watching, among other things, to see if a slate of populist lefties endorsed by Zoran Mamdani wins their races. That's what the polls say. Basically, we've been focused on right-wing populism, but left-wing populism, I'm not unhappy to say, seems to be having its moment in the sun as well. Also, we'll be talking about this housing bill passed by the Senate, certainly to be passed by the House and signed into law by the president, 85-5, a bipartisan measure that's rare these days, of course, as you guys know. And basically, this limits giant Wall Street hedge funds to purchasing merely no more than 350 houses at a time in residential areas. And we will talk about what effect that will have. Spoiler alert, not much. And last but not least, the SAVE Act, which is President Trump's proposed citizenship verification system to try to figure out if people who vote are actual U.S. citizens, has been struck down by a judge as unconstitutional and illegal. We'll get into that. So, all right. Good morning, JT. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I can't complain. How are you doing this morning?
I'm okay. I'm doing good. I have an odd fondness for overcast days, and this is one of those. It's from growing up in a place that had a lot of them, Dayton, Ohio. We used to have horror movie directors used to love to make movies in where I grew up because they got a lot of overcast days with fast moving clouds, so it's very atmospheric and bleak. And so and then half of my family is from Brittany, which is also like the same thing. It's so overcast and bleak and windy that sometimes people lose their minds from the howling wind. And I mean howling, like literally my mom got out of the car one time in Brittany with me and the earrings were yanked out of her ears, like through her earlobes, right? Like that it's like, hurricane force. That's like normal. People lose their minds and kill their families and themselves. It's like...
Everybody loses their mind and kills their families.
They do. It happens. It's not even like every day, but it's not like it's not every year. It does happen.
See, I like it when it's. I like nighttime. I'm a fan of nighttime. I love it at night. Nobody's around. It's quiet. It's calm, etc. Or snow days, rain. Mm-hmm. I like all that stuff.
I loved COVID for that reason. Things were quiet, and you could even in New York City. There were so many birds. I mean, I had a passel of blue jays in my courtyard. I mean, COVID was cool. Lot of interesting. Just driving around and there's no traffic. Beautiful.
I didn't experience.
You and I are not the social types.
Mine was a marriage that was effectively failing during COVID. So that wasn't.
That's not great. So good.
Yeah,
my divorce came through during COVID, so it was actually a time of great happiness. But because it's like the marriage sucked, it's like Louis C.K. as with so many things, except for jerking off in the plant, has this right, which is like
Louis C.K. jerked off in a plant.
Yeah, that's like in front of those two girls. That's why he got like Me Too'd. He invited two chicks back to his dorm room. He's like, "Want to come back to my hotel room and hang and drink?" They were like, "Okay." And then he was like, "Hey," while they were there, "do you mind if I jerk off in this plant?" And he did.
Did they say
the effect on the plant.
Did they say yes?
They said, "Sure, go ahead." And then
So they agreed. So they had he had consent to jerk off in a plant. He didn't have consent from the plant, obviously.
That's right. Exactly. That's exactly it. But that's right. So Louis C.K., he said, you shouldn't say, like when he was getting divorced, like people, "Oh, I'm so sorry." It's like, no, don't say you're sorry about the divorce. Like it's that's a good thing. You're solving a problem. The bad marriage was the thing to feel sorry for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't feel sorry for the divorce. I mean, at the point when the divorce came through, I was I was exhilarated, but I was exhilarated because A, I had to go to court multiple times. She didn't show up. And B, I was with my new girlfriend who I was very excited about. So it was kind of like both of those things happened.
That's a win-win. Your ex-wife must have kept losing hearings because she wasn't showing up.
Well, I didn't want anything. I just wanted the divorce. Right. Like, for me, it was just kind of like, okay, you left. Let's call it a day. Let's stop this lagging thing.
That's the best way. Yeah.
Yeah. And then my new girlfriend, she was Catholic. So her thing was like, I don't want to be touched until you get the divorce. Now, this didn't happen in practice. She is not a good Catholic. I'm sure. What? Right. But that was her thing. I want the divorce. She was insecure. She wanted the divorce. She wanted to make sure it was over. Fair enough. I wanted to make sure.
It's really funny because the last person, if you're dating someone who's going through a divorce, literally that person's ex-husband or ex-wife is the last person on the planet you need to be worried about.
Yes. But she didn't realize that because she's never been in a divorce. Right? Like, it's so awkward. I'm sorry. Let's get to the show.
You put your dick in a wood chipper first, right? Like, there's just no way. All right. So, yeah, let's get to it. All right. You want to start things out? There's a bunch. Right now, there's three congressional races in New York City and environs. I don't know how you fucking pronounce that. But basically, all where Zohran Mamdani has backed a slate of left-wing populist, progressive populist, what do you want to call them, who are, including Brad Lander, who was his former competitor for mayor, who ended up dropping out of the race and then campaigning with him and endorsing him. It was really cute, like Brad Lander, much older, like boomer, like, city biking around town next to Zohran. It was very cute. And now Zohran returned the favor. I don't like to make strong predictions, but I'm going to say, like, it definitely looks like all or most of these candidates are going to win. It looks like the age of corporatism is, the tide of corporatism among the Republican Party we know is gone. In the Democratic Party, you and I have seen it coming, but it looks like now they're really in trouble. I mean, of course, New York City isn't the entire country, but far from it. But still, I got to say, they're taking note, right? These are anti-Zionist Jewish New Yorkers who are swinging these races to the anti-Zionist left. It's worth noting. It's also a huge commentary on, how unpopular Israel and its policies are now.
Yes. Yeah. The reason that Mamdani was so dangerous to the political establishment, and I'm putting dangerous in quotes because
threatening,
but I'm trying to make the point, right, that he showed that a person can take an anti-Israeli point of view and beat the living shit out of his opposition with it. He didn't hide, he didn't run, he didn't cower for cover in the corner the moment that Israel was brought up and they were screaming blood libel. He plowed through it. It's like, the Enterprise is going to be destroyed. And Picard says, fuck it, just go through the hole. Just run through it. It's that. It's this idea of confronting this thing directly with the majority of the population itself in the country saying, we think you're committing a genocide. Or at the very least, we think you are mass murdering women and children. You're killing babies. That's what we think as a population. And the only issue is, how do you harness that into a political cadre as opposed to these people who are effectively being paid off? The people who are being paid off thinks that this is dangerous because they assume, well, AIPAC and all of this money is going to come into the thing in order to change the dynamics. That may work against Thomas Massey. That may not work in New York City, which is what Mamdani is showing, that, hey, there's a path through this that works, that pushes back on all of these people who are screaming that they need to go to Israel before they deal with the priorities of New York. No, it's a good thing. The catch is, do other people recognize what is taking place in these elections and the path that they could take in regards to these elections in order to get elected? That's the interesting thing to me. I mean, do you think this is something indicative of something larger, that this goes beyond New York into other states?
It does, because of the economic populism side of this. I mean, let's not forget, right? Like, as big of a deal as, the God, the war, I shouldn't really say the war, Israel's genocide against Gaza, it wasn't really a war, has been since 2023. It wasn't the main topic of the congressional, of the mayoral race that elected Mamdani. He ran on affordability or unaffordability in New York, one of the most expensive cities in the country. The quality of life in the city is going down. Unemployment is going up. Underemployment is going up, yet the rents keep going up. And it's unsustainable. That's a national problem, right? I mean, it's more extreme in places like L.A., San Francisco, and New York. But, that was true in Thomas Massie's district there in Northwest Kentucky, too. So I think that's the part that I think is super interesting. And I think that's the part where Donald Trump is really fucking up the Republican Party in this cycle, in the midterms. I mean, we have a national affordability crisis. It's been at the top of the polls now for several years. Obviously, inflation is high. People are terrified about AI. Economic insecurity is a huge thing. And you have the president saying, I love the inflation. I don't worry about high gas prices. I don't care. That doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is making sure that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. Well, I mean, American people don't like that. And when I say the American people, I don't mean it like when right wingers say the American people and they just really mean conservative Americans. I mean the American people, left, middle, right, everybody. Nobody likes it. And so, when you feel like not only not seen, but when you feel completely brushed off, when you're suffering, you're going to be pissed and you're going to go to the polls and you're going to lash out.
But when weren't the American public brushed off? I mean, like, does Trump really come across to you at any point, be it first term, this term, or anywhere in between, that he cared about the American public?
Yeah, in 2015, 2016, when he went to places like Scranton and Dayton over and over and over again and said, these big, beautiful factories, they're all closed. It's a shame. These jobs went to China. They're over, all that stuff. He was basically, his message was, I see you. It must suck to live here. I wouldn't want to live like this. I'm going to change it all. I'm going to bring back your jobs. Now, the thing is, obviously, he didn't know what to do about bringing back the jobs. And I don't know that he really even tried or cared or gave it any thought. Maybe he did. But the point is, this was the first time that a presidential nominee for either party ever articulated the problem. Like, it's kind of like, I see that you have cancer and that must suck. Now, I'm not a doctor and I don't know how to give you chemo. but that would still be nice to be acknowledged. I was thinking about this yesterday in conjunction with watching movies. And I was like, there's all sorts of movies about family dynamics. I'm an only child of a single mom. Look this up. There's only one major movie that I can find that has that dynamic, which is a Little Man Tate, Jodie Foster movie, which I never saw. And I was like, that's completely ignored. That dynamic is not in our culture. Like, we're invisible. Anyone who's ever been invisible, invisibility feels bad. Donald Trump made people feel seen. That's why they registered to vote. That's why they canvassed for him. Yeah, in 2016. He seemed to lose the thread toward the end of his first term, but the American people are very forgiving, and so he was leaving anyway. They let that go, and COVID distracted everyone. But I think this time there's no avoiding it. I mean, he's doing all this shit for Israel. This is just for Israel. And it's clear, It's like a narrative that it's not, you could fit it on a bumper sticker. That's easy.
I think, true. I accept that. I think that was part of it. I think the other part of it was rage. Mm-hmm. That Trump embodied this rage against a political system that the American public doesn't believe cared. Meaning, in a real way, he was a weapon of sorts. It's not that the seems to be terrified of this guy. And whereas the center, for the most part, has failed masterfully aristocrat, that this guy comes across as a different animal. And it's the difference that the American public cared about. Like the fact that he seemed different, a blue-collar billionaire that's willing to basically go and tear down what all of these other liberals in the left and the right have effectively created. I get the sense it was a lot of that also. I agree with you. He did go to those locations. He did come across as being somewhat different. But I think part of me, because I have a hard time reconciling this idea that Trump tried to basically overturn American governance into Trumptopia the first time in 2016. The American public sees it, and then they elect him in 2020 or 2024. Mm-hmm. That's weird to me. Like, I don't know how you reconcile the two. Like, how I think, obviously I was doing something massively illegal.
And now you're putting that in office. Studying this for years, right? The age of Trump, these three presidencies, right? Including Biden. First of all, COVID was a black swan moment. It wasn't just like a, you know, time we'll look back on and be like, well, we all have to stay inside. I mean, it literally changed everything. It changed the way we work, where we work, how we work. I mean, you know, there could never be a show like The Office after COVID, right? Because no one goes to the office. It's a big deal. I think a lot of people, you know, it changed us in a radical way. And Biden, I mean, look, the thing is, if they'd elected, I know we agree, Bernie, for sure. Trump agrees if they'd elected Bernie. Bernie would have had probably much more smooth sailing for those 4 years. But honestly, if they had elected anyone who didn't suck as bad as Joe Biden, almost anyone else on that debate stage in 2020, maybe not Amy Klobuchar, but, you know, you could have put, you know, Gavin Newsom or Tom Steyer or, you know, fucking Pete Buttigieg or, you know, any of those, maybe even Beto O'Rourke, they all would have had a better shot at succeeding as president than Joe Biden did, who was brain dead by the day that he took, by election day 2020. He was fried. There was no president. I mean, so the Democrats spend the entire Biden years from 2021 to 2024 instead of addressing the people's problems, the only thing they do is the infrastructure bill, right? Congratulations. Yeah, I mean, you know, that'll have an effect. But meanwhile, the people are dying from high prices and unemployment. They don't get their jobs back post-COVID. The housing prices are crazy. Democrats don't focus on any of that. They focus on fucking weird-ass shit about Russia and Ukraine. They focus on bullshit. Right, that the American people don't care about. And they go after Trump over and over, feeding right into his narrative. These people hate me because I'm dangerous to them. And these are the people who you hate. Like, you know, the enemy of your enemy should be your friend. I'm your friend. I think that's why he got returned to power. Because the Democrat, it was theirs to lose. They Democrats chose to lose.
I accept that. You know, what's wild about this is both parties are going through went through similar things. So, for example, as you point out, Joe Biden is so occupied with the Ukraine war that takes that takes up a lion's share of his time. That's the most important thing to him. The American public can see that, right?
Can I just interject? And he chooses the losing side, which the American people never like in a war. Mm-hmm. It's not just that, you know, South Vietnam, wasn't going well. We chose the losing side. When you choose the losing side, the voters hold that against you. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, we knocked over the government and assisted that side in starting a war, or at the very least, igniting a war. Totally. And then, yeah, you're right. We lost that war. And it was obvious that we were losing the war over the course of the Biden's term, but it was also obvious that his focus seems to be on that, as opposed to the real world phenomena that Americans were suffering through. If you remember, Jen Psaki came out and made this argument of the quote, Putin price hike. And that made the argument that our values are not without cost. In fact, I think that was the quote, our values are not without cost. Effectively saying that, hey, you as Americans just need to pay more because our values demand that we fight Putin and Russia, which is not going to
work. We never voted on that.
Nobody voted on that. And by the way, Trump was making the same argument, though. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't buy as many teddy bears this year. You can't buy 23 teddy bears. Maybe you can only buy two. Right. Or making the argument about the price hike, talking about, well, that's Putin's fault, or that's Iran's fault, because Iran is, you know, trying to get a nuke and we needed to intervene. And so the cost that you're paying for inflation is related to Iran. Don't blame us for it, which sounds a lot like our values are not without costs. It's very similar, like in regard to the way
it is
the
very similar
governments are. Like,
and whoever breaks that fucking mold is gonna win, right?
Yes, agreed.
And also, you know, getting back to something you said earlier, and I want to echo that. We should do some comments after that. I think was the honesty aspect, right? Like you don't run away from who you are. Zoran Mamdani didn't run away from being Muslim, having a fucking crazy ass name. You know, he didn't. When they branded his campaign, I mean, people outside of New York don't know this, but he used like, graphic design that was straight out of like, like a street design in Mumbai, right? I mean, it like literally, it's bright orange and purple. And, you know, these are distinctly Indian designs. The fonts that were used were not meant to, like, sanitize his identity. This is a guy with a beard, right? Like, he's not trying to, like, de-Muslimize himself. The only thing that he does, the only thing that's appealing to, like, quote-unquote mainstream culture is that he always wears a suit, even when he goes to the polar bear swim.
What? He wore a suit when he went to the polar bear swim?
Fucking funny as shit. And he also went, and while riding a bike through the mean streets of Brooklyn. So
that's funny.
I mean, the point is that that's his brand, right? It's kind of like, and I liked it because it's sort of like, I'm a young guy, I'm Muslim, I'm different, I'm Gen Z, but I'm going to be, you know, but I'm also going to be professional. I'll be the mayor. I will dress appropriately. Yeah, I mean, the point is that he didn't being straightforward, like you were talking about, like the, you know, if you're anti-Zionist, just fucking own it. They're going to nail you anyway. It's like if I were running for office, I'd be like, yeah, I'm a communist. Obviously, we're not going to have communism in the United States anytime soon. Sadly, but I'm a communist. You know, you have to own it.
Basically, I'm a true believer. That's what you're getting across.
I believe it's something that you might not agree with, but I won't lie to you. Right.
But I think the America, like, I think the first person who it takes on a political temperament where they are trying to be straight with the American public is going to be the one that wins.
No doubt.
Because it's a difference.
It had that reputation in 2016. I mean, it's amazing because he lies like the day is long now about everything. Well, come on, the 300-foot gash in the reflecting pool? I mean, that's not true. That didn't happen. And by the way, I don't understand what's wrong with the national media. They have cameramen, right? I mean, they can go out and see that there's no gash, but they don't. I don't know why. I mean, it's like they can walk over from their studios in Washington. But like, it's just, they lie about everything. And but like at the time, he was viewed as being honest about the things that mattered because he was brusque and crass and he didn't follow the niceties.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's do some comments. Okay. Harry Balsack. By the way, Jamarl, I prefer you over John.
Well, thank you.
Get a room, you two.
I appreciate that.
F you so. Thanks for the $2. Did you know that the police murder over 10,000 family dogs a year?
That's awful.
Let's continue this. F you so also continues $2 more. Police departments across America are trained by the IDF. The IDF trains police to see neighborhoods they serve as war zones, and we're all combatants. It always leads back to toxic Israel. I guess they kill dogs that, like, they think...
Defend their owners.
Yeah.
Defend their owners. I mean, even if it's like, and I mean defense, I don't mean that they're biting the cops. Mm-hmm. The cops look at everything as a threat, mm-hmm. and murder threats.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. I mean, it's, hey, this dog's out of order. Got to kill the dog.
And dudes, don't you have anything else that you could use? I have a story about this. It's a great story. So I had this ex-girlfriend who I was still friends with, and she knew I love cats. So she was like, oh, I'm going to the animal shelter to pick up a cat. Will you come with me? Now, there's nothing better than that, because like you get to visit the animal shelter and you're not going to come home with a cat, right? Like you're, right. There will be a cat, but you're not going to be responsible for it. So it's so fun. So I helped her pick out a cat, a very pretty, calm tabby cat. She has that cat for 6 months. The no muss, no fuss, she loves it. One day it's sitting on her lap and suddenly it explodes into a blizzard of claws and teeth and goes after her and starts lunging at her and biting her and clawing her. She's like beating it back. It's like comes after her. She takes, yeah, but like, I mean, you know, look, those, some of those joggers in California who are killed by mountain lions, those cats only weigh 40 pounds. Okay. I mean, they kill them. Okay. So, I mean, cats are incredibly powerful. So, I mean, so she's trying to beat it back with the lamp. There's a huge ruckus. She retreats to the bathroom. The cat, I saw the door later. The door was caved in like the cheap IKEA, you know, Home Depot door, caved in, yeah, where the cat had been lunging up against it. Like a cat, like an 11, 12 pound animal. Anyway, the point is, the cat was crazy. It's in an apartment building in Manhattan. The neighbors hear it. They call 911. NYPD responds. They think it's a home invasion, right? They break down the door. Kitty goes after the shot. They shot the cat.
What?
What? Travels through the cat, through the floor, and nearly kills a dude watching TV on his couch in the apartment below, because it goes right through his leg, right? And like basically nicks his femoral, that big artery, right? Is that the femoral artery? Yeah. And so he almost dies. Thank God they figured it out. They heard the dude screaming. The New York Post had, she made the New York Post headline, Catastrophe. But I mean, I was like, really? They had to shoot the cat? Like, and by the way, I'm impressed that they were able to, right? I mean,
that was damn good aim.
Cats, right? Are pretty small, yeah.
That is amazing. Like, I've watched those cats on Instagram go bananas. It is the funniest thing in the world. Like, where the cat goes ham. Like, there was once where the dog knocked the cat into the water. The cat was, like, pussyfooting on the side of the bathtub. And the dog just, like, bloop. And the cat flipped out. The cat lost it.
Oh, you know what?
It fell into the water and jumped out. Oh, man, it beat the shit out of that dog.
My cat, I was taking a bath one time, and my cat fell into the bath with me. Holy shit, he fucked me up. He was like, rah! Water spraying all the climb. It's like, they're insane. They have it's like they have like 75 cups of coffee in them at any given time.
And you chose the cat, just to be clear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I chose the cat. Yeah, it's kind of my fault. Yeah. Hey, for 6 months, it was all. So she talked to the cops, right? And the cop said, the cop said, oh, this happens all the time. And she was like, what? And she said, oh, human beings, sometimes they just have a little globule of insanity in their brain and they tweak, a perfectly normal person just goes haywire. And like mammals do that, like horses, they said dogs, cats, it's like, it happens. They see that all the time. And I was like, holy shit.
That's wild.
Yeah,
that's why I prefer dogs. That's why I prefer
dogs. Can do it too, you know. I mean,
I've never seen it. My dog has never done no mess like that. Well, not untweaked
until there's a reason for it. Right? Wow, until he or weird. She or they. I don't want to presume the sex of your dog. Anu Beetle says it was Weinstein that did it on plants. You're mixing them up. Is that true?
That's what I thought. It was Harvey Weinstein. I didn't think it was Louis C.K. Unless both did it.
Misled. Someone told me it was that.
Because I remember Weinstein apparently propositioned a woman and told her basically stay there as he masturbated in a plant. I always thought it was Weinstein.
Masturbated. He did, but he did all the rest. The plant out of it. He did ask, "Can I masturbate in front of you?" And they said, "Yeah, sure."
Which is wild to me, like. It's hard enough.
I would have been like, evening over, have a good night, see you later.
How do you keep a hard on? Like, in my mind,
right?
It's like, a woman looking at you in disgust as you whack off, which
that's got to be part of his shtick, though, because he always talks about masturbation in his stand up, right? So he must be, that must be part of it, like the humiliation.
Oh, you think her disgust. was part of the turn on.
I think Louis C.K. has, he views himself with disgust.
Oh, that's wild. It's like you're whacking off and it's like you see her disgust and it turns you on even more.
Because like, you're like, I'm such a...
You should be ashamed of yourself, Louis. I'm sorry. That's rough.
Exactly.
That's just rough, man.
The thing is, I always think, like, whenever I masturbate, I'm always like, this is the most undignified thing. I wish there was another way.
Right.
You know, you're right. Like, afterwards, you're just like, God, I wish I hadn't spent that 20 minutes doing that. Like, what a waste of my fucking time. Like, what's wrong with human beings? What's wrong with males? What's wrong with...
Hey, so you and I are very similar in this. I thought it was just me. Oh, okay. I thought it was just me. Because my thought is, there is... I forget who it was, but they were like, they caught their parents having sex. And it's like, son, it's a beautiful act.
It's like, what are you talking about, Dad?
Yeah, it's so beautiful. Like, you end up with your sticky hands and you just, and then it's just like.
This is a beautiful moment, son. No, I agree with you. I always thought this is so undignified. And if it wasn't for this feeling of compulsion associated with the just kind of the human nature aspect, this would never take place, right?
No, exactly. That's the thing about sex. It's such a powerful urge that when people, I mean, you sort of see that, like Catholic priests, right? They study like at seminary for what, 6, 10 years or something? Yeah. They blow up their entire lives because they can't control it. You know, Louis C.K. couldn't control it. I mean, it's just, I think we have to understand sex that way. It's almost an undeniable force.
From my point of view, I just look at it as acceptance. It just is what it is. Like, it's let the beast out. That sounds horrible.
one of the things you always told our kids is, like, if you come into our room without knocking, there's a solid chance you'll see something you'll never be able to unsee.
You'll never forget.
So you will never forget this.
Installing a $20 door lock on your
bedroom. We will show you exactly how you got spawned. And so if you do not want to see this, if the door is locked, if the door is closed,
let the boy watch. It's the Louis for real thing. Like when I'm playing chess, all of people are like, let the boy watch. There's a Will Ferrell joke where Will Ferrell is talking about, like, the kid comes into the room. I think it's Anchorman. And he's like, let the boy watch. The boy watch.
So great.
My father is, you know, just like I've watched. My father's father has done that.
Oh, my God.
Let the boy watch. Beautiful, magical act.
Daniel BTS, Ted, the GOP is still corporatist to the hilt. They've just managed to convince most of their voters that they're not by playing into culture war bullshit.
True. Yeah, that's true. I mean, but Democrats do the same. It's just a different culture war.
True. God Emperor, speaking of the Democrats, Democrats are in a cult. They're literally voting for a Nazi socialist Democrat candidate in Maine. Vote blue no matter who.
By the way, what is this platform?
A Nazi socialist, just saying.
Is he a socialist for real?
Not really. No. He's just a liberal.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. I mean, did he know that was a Nazi Totenkopf? I believe he did. I think he changed. I think he's like, he's an opportunist like J.D. Vance. If J.D. Vance wakes up one morning and he looks out and sees like portraits of Vladimir Lenin and Mao Zedong and red flags and hammers and sickles everywhere, he's going to be out there singing the Internationale with the best of them.
But isn't that... all of them. Like, for example, if Superman ended up in the Soviet Union as opposed to the United States, Superman still would have been Superman. He just would have been in Soviet context.
That's true.
And for all intents and purposes, it's not like these people are somehow different. They're just functioning in the American context. If they were born in Russia, they would be functioning in a Russian context, still with their own ideals and everything else, but within the framing of Russia. I guess my point is, isn't that true of all people?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, if you, that's why, like, you know, in Nazi Germany, if you wanted to have a job, you had to join the party. You had to have that, wear that badge on your lapel. If you were in Iraq, you had to be in the Ba'ath party if you wanted to work. And if you were, like, incredibly principled and you were like, fuck that, I'm not going to be part of the system, then you're going to starve to death. And so is your family. So it's rough. Yeah. I mean, I respect that, but, like, it's rough. Anna Mandaraki. Massey lost not just because of the money and propaganda, but also because right-wing libertarians are all talk. They didn't bother to go vote, even though they whine about everything. I have another question. This would be for our right-wing libertarian viewers, and I know we have a bunch. How many of you guys are there, really? Do you know what I mean? Like, I always
in a political space,
libertarians. Like, yeah, how many of you guys are really conservative libertarians? I feel like,
what do you mean?
You guys, you know, talk a lot, and I like you guys, but there are not. I don't think by votes. I don't know if how much of the GOP you guys represent.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like, if you could separate GOP from people who consider themselves libertarians, what is that amount?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I mean, is it allegorious to DeSantis' group or lefties? Or do you think that there's a difference?
There's a lot more lefties. I mean, let me put it this way. Let's say you had like a four-party system, right? You split the two parties right now. You split the Republican Party into the corporatist Republican Party and the new Libertarian Party. You split the Democratic Party and you have a split-off Democratic Socialist Party, let's say. And you make all of those parties equally viable. Like they all have the same revenue stream. They all have the same ballot access. They all have the same debate access. They're all considered equally legitimate. They're all covered the same in the media. What happens? I think the smallest of those parties is probably the Democratic Party. I think the vast majority of Democrats would vote Democratic Socialist if they thought it was viable. You know, we saw that during the Bernie Sanders stuff. When they had the chance, when they thought it was viable, they went there. I don't know enough about the libertarians to know, but I suspect the Libertarian Party would still not be as big as the Republican Party.
God, man, I wish Sanders had somebody on his team to deal with black issues in a way that made, from my point of view, rising tides lift all boats. And you should make an argument that is geared around this idea that we're going to bring everybody up to snuff, whether it's healthcare, whether it's education, whether it's Social Security, and making sure that people who've dedicated their entirety of their energies into this country don't necessarily have to die broke, poor, on the streets, old, right? But you also, just by virtue of being a Democrat, got to be able to make an argument that wins in South Carolina. And what you ended up with was Clinton on one end giving her speech and Sanders on one end giving a speech. And the African-Americans who were there, many of which were old, would say, we like what he was saying, but. And the but was just kind of like, yeah, we're uncomfortable with that guy. Hence, Clyburn. Is
it the fact that he's an old Jewish dude from Brooklyn, or what was it?
It's the familiarity with the Democratic Party. There's an element of, let's say, the black misleadership class, as Black Agenda Report calls them, that have become fused with this idea of being Democrats. In their mind, there's a historical context that they're effectively running with in the line of the Democratic Party and African Americans. And that for Sanders, somebody who was considered on the outs, that made it difficult for him to reach that group. Now, in the younger generation, this didn't really matter to the younger generation. They loved him. But as we always put out, and as Robbie always point out, they don't vote.
Nope.
It's Sanders loses in South Carolina. If Sanders would have won in South Carolina, he would have had off to the races. He would have had a black community that would have said, well, he can win blacks, and he was winning the younger demographic 70% more than what Clinton and what Trump were bringing in together by themselves. So, but you can't ignore that contingent. Pete Buttigieg, who gets like negative 2% of the black vote, will never be president of the United States if he can't figure out a way to fix that. And anybody else?
Understand why. I mean, they obviously know that. They have internal polling. They know, they know more about this than we do.
Yeah.
About their situation. Why don't they fucking do anything about it? Do they just not know how? Or do they think it would involve some political trade-offs that would cost them something they care about more?
You mean Buttigieg?
Yeah, for example, or Sanders. I mean, like,
I don't know how Buttigieg could fix that, because I think Buttigieg's issue is that Buttigieg is gay. I don't take issue with that, but obviously a large part of the coalition that they would need to get elected does. For Sanders' part, I don't know what he was doing, if I'm being bluntly honest with you. I don't know if it was a situation where Sanders was shocked. Well, let me say, okay. To put it in context, this was taking place during the Biden term, I suppose, when Sanders was going against Joe Biden. Sanders needed to win South Carolina, and Joe Biden ends up taking South Carolina. The same thing was, something similar was happening with Clinton, but Clinton was different because I don't think Sanders realized that he was going to catch fire in the way that he did.
Yeah, he was a dog, in 2016, he was a dog who caught a car.
Exactly. He was like, okay, now what do I do with the fact that I caught this car? The second time around, though, is inexcusable. Because at that point, he knew he was going to be a main contender. And he knew the opposition he was going to go up against. But he just wasn't willing to throw a punch. So
when I interviewed Bernie for my book about him in 2015, right at the beginning of the campaign, he told me, I'm not going to be the nominee. He was running 2% in the Democratic polls at the time. He's like, I'm just trying to pull the Democratic Party over to the left, like a principled primary run, like a John Edwards. Obviously he failed. Yeah.
I'm talking about not even in the run and pulling them to the left. They showed him off like a trophy of sorts, as if they were rubbing themselves in Sanders. But in the reality of, this was, let me ask you this. They don't seem to get the hint. Even now, they don't seem to get the hint. And
no,
what's going to happen is
they're going to get hit. Really?
You think it's unbelievable? I think it's just, they realize that it's a captive system. This system would have to collapse before these people change. That's my thought.
It will. I mean, it will. The reason I take you're right. It's totally believable. Nothing could be more believable. When I say it's unbelievable, I'm kind of like, when you have pattern recognition, you can see what's coming. It's like, this isn't like you're not even tied to the train tracks and the train's coming towards you. You're sleeping on the train tracks and the train is coming at you at 1 mile an hour and you're choosing to just sleep in later.
Yes.
You could just sit up and walk away and you're choosing not to.
They have become so attached to the way this is and with the belief that the American public is not going to do anything. It's like a wife in a marriage and she complains, she screams, but he knows she's not going nowhere. So he doesn't have to do shit.
That's exactly what it is. FUSO, will we ever see the blackmail Israel has on Trump? Thanks for the dollar, by the way, FUSO.
I want to see it. They should release it. Release everything.
Please. Annie, I just wanted to add, not everyone running in New York City is good. Mark Levine, that fucking lizard, was also on this Zionist shit, then did a 180 in office. He made sure to purchase a majority of Israeli bonds. Oh, I'm not talking about like objective goodness. I'm just talking about Mark. Objective goodness is a whole different thing.
Objective goodness.
Jesus. Politics. Landis 48. I lived in Scranton at that time. Trump got on stage and kept repeating, "What do you have to lose?" Very much landed with a significant portion of 50 plus men, age 50 plus men in the area. I bet. As one of
that's
those,
a hell of an argument, ain't it? What do you got to lose? These people have fucked you over royally for forever. Trust me, the blue collar billionaire. I have no attainments.
Yeah, yeah. What have you got to lose? P.W. Walker. The entire point about American foreign policy is to secure American domestic economic policy. It's all about seeing pet projects where they skim from. And thanks for the dollar.
Well, it's two things. It's geopolitical interests and economic interests, and those things dovetail. Like, meaning you have some people who are just globalists who believe that the U.S. should have control and domination over the globe. They grew up in a political system in which this is the way we talked about power. It's the way Trump talks now. It's the way Obama talked. It's the way Clinton talked. It's the way Joe Biden talked. Meaning they talk in a very particular way. The press asks them questions from a very particular angle, and those angles are always dominance, control. Meaning you grew up in that system, you just kind of assume that you will also take over that dominance and control once you get to that particular point. But they do that stuff for the contracts. I want the minerals. I want the oil. I want the rare earths, et cetera. Agree. Both dovetail.
A few more comments, and we should hit a few of these other questions, then we can get more comments. Okay. FUSO, the American people are watching America's imperialists' death and destruction in 4K, and the empire can no longer hide it because of the internet. Agreed. Thanks for the dollar, by the way. Right Hook, thanks so much for the $5. Thanks you for everything you gentlemen do. And thank you for supporting us. This discourse is not only necessary in these tumultuous times, but a true pleasure to dissect and analyze along with you and your wonderful listeners. Thank God, thank you. Don't make me cry, damn you. FUSO, Obama and Clyburn conned them into voting for racist Biden. True. He was a racist.
No, I mean the Khan part. That's more complicated, right? Like think, okay. If you think back to the point where Kamala Harris and that choice for Kamala Harris, Joe Biden intentionally fucked over the party. Mm-hmm. I think he was pissed. I think he was annoyed by them basically pushing him out. And if you remember, Joe Biden came out, gave a speech, and in that speech basically said Kamala Harris was going to be his choice. Now, this was before a conversation he was supposed to have with Clyburn and Obama. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Joe Biden talked to Clyburn. Clyburn is the one who was like, hey, you should make Kamala Harris your choice. By the time they were getting to Obama, Obama and the group was shopping around somebody else with the idea of going to a mini convention. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. Do you remember this?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, this is in 2024. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Clyburn was a kingmaker in at least two consecutive cycles. Yes. Okay, so we have some more comments, but I do want to, and we'll get to those. Housing bill. So what are we to make of this housing bill? Basically, it's going to cut a little bit of the red tape for buying a house. It's going to make it so that no hedge fund or other major institutional investor can buy more than 350 houses. I'm not clear on like whether there's a time limit there. And having worked in banking, let me just say two words, shell company, right? How fucking hard is that to do? Everyone agrees this isn't going to make any difference. It's not. I mean, what would make homes more affordable? Municipalities should seize abandoned homes under eminent domain and sell them to people who, for a dollar, who agree to fix up the homes and then they can keep them after 5 years. Get rid of the Dodd-Frank Act that makes it impossible for self-employed people to refinance and get mortgages? There's a lot of approaches that could make homes more affordable. Hell, you could also, get rid of, all I'm saying is this isn't going to do shit. I do agree that home ownership is an important path for financial stability for people who can, who can get in. There also probably should make it easier to have lower down payments, because down payments is often the number one thing that keeps people out, right? Like, I can't come up with $150,000 in cash for a down payment. How the fuck? The mortgage I could probably afford. So right. It's like that. I guess this is notable just because it's the political class acknowledging that there is a problem, even if this particular solution doesn't work, right?
Yeah, but it's like, what's the point of being seen if nothing is going to be done about it? Like, hey, we acknowledge the issue, and here's a bill to show acknowledgement without doing anything about it. It's a fake option. It's a fake solution. It's not a solution at all. It's just them throwing a bone in regards to acknowledgement without necessarily doing anything tangible to do anything about it. As you point out, I buy 350 houses for my hedge fund. I create a shell company that buys another 350, and I do another shell company that buys another 350. I can get around, meaning you can get around this is the point that I'm trying to make, right? Which means that it doesn't necessarily do anything to solve the problem that Americans are angry about. It just gives this idea of a fake solution to it. So they could say, well, we at least passed this. Yeah, but what's the point of passing something if you're not going to solve the issue or even fix the issue or even seemingly coming close to fixing the issue? Yeah, great. If you want people to have houses, make sure the houses are easy to get. It's like an education. If you want people to have a college education, make it free. If you want people to not smoke, put a tax on it. Like anything else, if something is harder to do, less people are going to do it. If something is easy to do, more people are going to do it. If you want people to get houses, make those houses easily available. No, I agree.
And also, you could probably ban Airbnb and companies like it, right? Like, that's a big part of it. These giant hedge funds, they buy residential properties, they convert them into full-time rentals, like short-term for 2 days, 5 days, whatever, and nobody's living there. And this happens a lot in like mixed areas, like the better parts of northern New Jersey, like around Newark and places like that. So you're pricing out the people who literally are just on the edge of maybe being able to afford their first house. It's really evil.
I'm going to shock the two of you right now.
Uh-oh. Well, I'm about to shock y'all too, because I'm going to tell you that I use Airbnbs when I travel, like almost religiously.
So do I.
I'm guilty of this myself.
Me too.
No, in my opinion, I think what should happen is that the government should own the houses. When you graduate high school, the government assigns you a house. You pay a mortgage payment to the government. Because the current system doesn't work. That's the whole problem.
Dirty communists. How dare you, sir?
Listen, dare you.
Welcome aboard.
I read the book. Right. I read the book. But no, the reason why I'm saying this is because the current system that we have, it does not work. And so what I think that should happen is that once you get like a 2 or 3 bedroom house, whatever, you pay it off. If you get married or whatever else, or having a family, you can then sell what you currently have, go into a larger house. And then here's the thing, though. I wouldn't abolish private property. Once you pay off, original for the house, it's yours, with the caveat that you no longer ever have to pay property tax on it because you've already have.
Yeah, you bought it.
Yeah, it's yours. Because right now, for example, here in Montana, you still pay property taxes even after you own the house. You don't own the house. You're renting it from the state. You don't own it. The state owns it. So let's just be honest about it. That's my whole thing.
It's not that the state owns, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's just that there's a tax associated with the property that you own, meaning the tax is on you for the property that you own. It's not that the state is claiming ownership. The state is claiming the right.
They 100% claim ownership, because if you don't pay your taxes, what happens?
Well, they're going to prosecute you.
They take your house. That means you don't own it.
They do. They take your house. It's true.
They take your house. You don't own that house. What you do is that you own a mortgage. And then after you pay off the mortgage, then the state still owns the house. Let's be honest about the system.
That's like that book movie, The House of Sand and Fog. It's like that, you know.
I've told y'all I was about to lose your
house. You can lose your house for paying for like blowing off a relatively minor like $100 bill.
Now, if the government can tell you how much water that you're able to flush through a toilet, you don't own your house. If the government is able to, with the force of arms, to take your house from you because you don't pay a tax bill, you don't own your house. You rent the house. You're a squatter.
Well, they can take your life if you don't pay your taxes.
By the way, I should point out that right now, I should bring this up. We are in the middle of a major stock market crash. It's a sell-off. The New York Stock Exchange is down at least 2 points, 2 percentage points in heavy trading. The Korean Stock Exchange plunged by 10% yesterday. Looks like it's a major tech-driven sell-off as people take profits, They're basically think that the AI bubble has gone too big. That's happening.
And by the way, we've seen this before with the first web crash, like where everybody was like, oh, the web is going to do this, the web is going to do that. And then all of a sudden it was a correction in regards to the way people was framing it. I mean, the reality of it is a lot of us, it's like 90% of the profits are driven by AI. Which means that if it wasn't for the AI stuff, we'd be in a recession.
And let's face it,
you can fact check me on that. And the large majority of the stocks are AI and AI driven.
And do we need Claude and GPT and Grok and all the other ones? Like, not really. There's too many.
Not to mention China is putting out free, open source AI for people to be able to see it. Because the reality of it is, if you're dealing with an American company, you're dealing with American government also. Mm-hmm. Like when Trump just put out the thing, Anthropic, I believe it was called, where he effectively overnight told them, hey, you can't sell that to other countries. Mm-hmm. And Anthropic is a company that is supposed to be sold all over. So you've effectively damaged the business in an overnight tweet. Or an overnight edict saying you can't sell this AI company abroad. I'm saying that if you're dealing with an American company, for all of the talk that America uses against China, well, China's technology has invaded all of these things. It's the other way around. It's our technology, our government that is directly related and involves itself into the technology that we're sending abroad. China's role in that is open source. You can see what we're doing behind the covers. It's that.
Couple comments. We got paid comments. Don't want to miss them. Sir Bikes, yeah. A lot. Thanks for the $2. Planter is not a Nazi. He's a Marine with PTSD. He removed the Nazi tattoo after finding out what it was. Please listen to the David Sirota interview of him. You'll see a very progressive dude.
Fair enough.
I'll believe all that. Let's see. The Sir Bikes-a-Lot says the vote no matter who, the vote blue no matter who doesn't support this guy, just like Mamdani. They would rather have Susan Collins in office, and thanks for the $2. Okay.
Obviously, yeah, true.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
I mean, that's where the Nazi stuff came from.
Yeah, by the way, I have to say, you know, I don't want this to be true, but I suspect that Susan Collins is probably at this point favored to win, right?
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't seem like he has enough of a lead that he can sustain that through November. I don't know. We'll see. He's pretty wounded. He would need an influx of cash in a big way. I don't know. I mean, Susan Collins, I mean, I don't know how the fuck she still represents Maine, because she's so feeble. And like, if I were a Mainer, I would just think like, I want someone with more oomph there, you know?
But, do you think it's consistency, or people like things to remain constant in general? Like, people don't like change for all intents and purposes, even inertia, if it's not.
Inertia, entropy, yeah, those are powerful forces.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, well, it's like, yeah, why do you keep returning Lindsey Graham to office, right? Like, why? Why? It's like you're just used to it. You can't imagine anything different. Aardvark, electing Nazis has worked so well for Republicans that the Democrats are doing it too. John D. Tocqueville, damn it, Robbie, I wanted you to join the USSR on Armory Forger, not in real life. Yeah, I just want to say, let it be recorded that as of 9:53 Eastern Time on Tuesday, June 23rd, the year of our Lord 2026, Robert West joined the Communist Party USA. From one comrade to another, we would like to welcome you aboard. Your free copy of Mao's Little Red Book is on its way.
You can keep it because I have plenty of toilet paper. So, no. Listen, I get what I'm saying here.
Welcome.
It's just... The current system does not work. We have empty houses all over this country while we have hundreds of thousands of homeless Americans living under bridges, dying from drugs and alcohol and exposure. Meanwhile, the gates are thrown open. We import the entire fucking third world. That's why I've got this hat on here. We have to take care of our own people. And if the current system does not work, then that system needs to be replaced. And it doesn't. And the capitalist system, I'm sorry, it's not God. What? The communist system sucks. It doesn't work either because it requires a monopoly on force. I don't know what the answer is, but it sure as hell is not what we've got right now.
Communism starts with the idea that we're all equal and becomes corrupted by human beings from there. Capitalism starts with the idea that we're unequal and that some of us deserve to starve to death, and then gets corrupted from there. You know which one I'm going to choose. That does it for today's show. We're going to go to bye, gentlemen. Bye.